interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 644. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So to be free, you also can't be sustainably shanghaied. SEO Summit, fusing Eurasian economic strength into global governance. If you don't think this is important and serious, fusing Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, member nations should uphold international justice and impartiality while actively promoting a multipolar world, Chinese President Xi Jinping said. And I hope you noticed should uphold, not shall uphold international justice and impartiality. And then, justice by whose standard and purpose? And impartiality from whose perspective, when the organization was created and exists, for all intents and purposes, to counter another international organization. The SCO summit has witnessed China, Russia, and India getting much closer. Fabio Massimo Parenti, Associate Professor of International Political Economy at China Foreign Affairs University, revealed to Sputnik. Quote, the result of the SCO, as we saw at the very end in the trilateral handshaking of Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, and Narendra Modi, is that India is likely to become another decision maker and a moving force in the SCO. So the handshake of three, when the organization is comprised of many, is not an altruistic as it seems, but it is strategic. SCO's geopolitical weight increasing. The SCO is steadily expanding it into the financial and commercial trading domains. China's economic might continues to serve as the driving force. The SCO plays a vital role in implementing new Eurasian trade routes, most notably the North-South Corridor, which has massive significance for Eurasia's economic integration and geopolitical cooperation. The organizations maintain a prominent security role, with Russia demonstrating proven effectiveness in the field. The SCO's influence in Asia is expanding, presenting, quote, a vast building counterweight to NATO, N-A-T-O, and U.S. alliances in the Indo-Pacific, Parenti points out. So NATO and U.S. alliance is the other, and its military. The trilateral partnership of Russia, China, and India further bolsters the SCO as a key platform for solving Eurasian issues, while BRICS remain a viable format for global matters. It is very important to stress that this is the least of all a military bloc in formation, and that is a very big message for the coming New World Order. So this is like the NATO military under the color of defense of economics interests that can't keep itself contained even from moving one inch east. This is what we're building here, this new world order, actually a total world order with the other. Think about how this is actually fomenting a condition in the future. The problem here is, he said, the SCO is least of all a military bloc. Not that it was not and will not be a military bloc. So let's keep very careful points about this as we're being told all this week. A bunch of propaganda here on the Sputnik. Pushing this whole thing. It's pretty interesting to watch it, the whole publication shift and now promoting what's going on. And so the problem here, it seems, he said that SCO is that least of all military bloc. And so that's going to sit there and fester, if you will. Especially if these nations intend to protect their economic interests against the other with more than maybe a catapulting bags of grain or borscht or porridge at the other. And why is the news of only a trilateral partnership? I thought there were about 10 nations in the partnership. Are the others, such as Iran and the kitty car caboose, only along for the ride? And how can it be global matters if the organization doesn't control the world globally because of the other? or because of the focus in economics, the existing private global financial system is the actual beneficiary. And this is actually progressing, not mainly on international law, justice, and impartiality, but the UN sustainability, Just Us, under cover of the protectors of the goddess Gaia, a fusing into global governance, the global governance system. Chairman Xi has proposed a global governance initiative aimed at establishing a more just and equitable international order. President Putin emphasized that the SCO could play a leading role in shaping this system. So this is just and equitable, but by whose measure? And how global governance under what bureaucratic system? Well, we that get behind a woodshed already know, don't we? Quote, the West should interpret this convergence as strategic, not just a temporary convenience, as the SCO summit demonstrated with its own 10-year plan. SCO and BRICS Plus, BRI, are building a multipolar world where the West must adapt and not counterattack, parenthesis. So for those not paying attention, Europe being almost subdued, save a successful uprising, or the soon-to-be-homegrown Pomerania's too busy cheerleading to notice, it's almost game over. The West is just about fully adapted. Trump onshoring the infrastructure to implement that parity adaptation to efficient, convenient, and economic global governance and control through sustainable development. Or why Jeffrey Sachs, an American economist and public policy analyst who is a professor at Columbia University, formerly director of the Earth Institute, working on the topics of sustainable development and economic development, director of the Center for Sustainable Development at Columbia University and president of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network. He is an SDG advocate for United Nations, the UN, Secretary General Antonio Guterres, on the Sustainable Development Goals, a set of 17 global goals adopted and in at the UN summit meeting in the September of 2015. From 2001 to 2018, Sachs was a special advisor to the UN Secretary General and held the same position under the previous UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, and prior to 2016, a similar advisory position related to the earlier Millennium Development Goals. Sachs is one of the founders of the Deep Decarbonization Pathways Project. The Deep Decarbonization Pathways Initiative is a global consortium formed in 2013 which researches methods to limit the rise of global temperature due to global warming to 2 degrees Celsius or less. Sachs writes, in Russia, I advise on how Russia could emulate successful transformations underway in Eastern Europe. My work in Russia lasted from December 1991 to December 1993, and I publicly announced my resignation January 1994. I stress these points because there is a long-standing narrative that says that I was out to help impose the Washington Consensus, a Milton Friedman-style free market economy. This is patently false, yet it is repeated. It should stop being repeated. There is another narrative that says that I was ruthlessly in favor of a market economy and uninterested in the rule of law, institutions, or social justice. This is even more patently wrong-headed. I have always regarded economic reform, institution building, and social justice to go hand in hand. In the debate over reform strategies, Sachs writes, I believe that Russia should commercialize its enterprises by turning them into corporations with state ownership. This was generally done. What do you think about that, Lip-Bu-Tan, 10% of Intel? Fascism promoted by an economist here, folks. Trump has a foundation in economics and business principles from Wharton School of University of Pennsylvania, right? And Sachs goes on to write, I believe that the large natural resource companies should remain in state hands. This was to ensure that the Russian government got the revenues from the production of metals, hydrocarbons, and other valuable commodities. Yet in America, the natural resources went in large part to the private property owner that the land is disposed to. is not typically retained by the government unless for future private disposal to those that can and do extract. And finally, in this summary of his allegiance, not to America, but to sustainable global economic development goals, in June of 2025, Sachs attended the Forum of the Future 2050 in Moscow, a conference organized by Konstantin Maloviev, and described as bringing us full circle to the Trilateral Partnership Engagement, a major international gathering focused on everything from space exploration to Russia's geopolitical path. It brought some of the most provocative thinkers to Moscow, and of whom it is described that Sachs' ambitions are hard to overstate. His ultimate goal is to change the world, to bend history, as he once said, quoting Robert F. Kennedy, wrote Nina Monk, the idealist and biography of Sachs. By the early aughts, he had risen from wonky academic to celebrity public intellectual. According to Monk, people in Sachs's inner circle affectionately call him the SHIT disturber, for your sensitive hearing, someone whose ego was offset by a selfless genius and a penchant for challenging orthodoxies. There's a certain messianic quality about him, George Soros, one of his patrons, told Monk. A nice and seemingly highly intelligent guy that he is, well, except he apparently didn't get the memo that climate change is not about the weather, and he fell for global warming, and now insists upon depriving carbon-based life of carbon, and therefore the death of life on Earth as we know it, preferring rather the Martian experience and landscape, right, Elon? Jeffrey Sachs has recently come into the public prominence, an economist, talking everywhere, it seems, not too much about economy or economics, but about geopolitical matters. And while every graphic or description includes a sustainability promo and propaganda, cognitive warfare device planting future normalcy bias and acceptance, it seems here Sachs is helping to bridge that global financial system disparities, promoting the goals of the propertyless future that they want, which can't make America great again. At all, because of our property laws here. And I've explained a lot of this. I'm going through, but here's the promotion this week. Half the global order is following this, and here we have Jeffrey Sachs as a prominent celebrity right now in the news for all of us in the West, talking silently by that moniker sustainability, talking of other things, but being familiarized to us. And again, we can't be adopted into the United States, this thing, but here we have the universities pressing. I told you about the university systems. So this is not the land of the free and home of the brave America most of y'all thought y'all lived in, the way this is working out. And it's partly because we don't step up and protect ourselves. And I see so many people in the feeds of all their properties are being attacked and nobody knows what to do about it. Zero people have come back to understand how they protect their own property. And that doesn't mean that some of you don't. Some of you do. But most of us don't. And then we're up against that machine, that system. And I've offered a link to Jeffrey Sachs. It's been a kind of a ongoing problem that I've watched. I like the guy, but you can like someone and not like their agenda, right? And you see, heard the development of this summary on him. But he comes along and all the people that I see giving him air and talking, he sounds reasonable. He is reasonable. Except you don't know what his agenda is about. And it becomes a very dangerous problem that we're walking ourselves into when I read, whether anybody else sees the connections and the consistency of the binding up of this global system. He sits here as a reminder that that's exactly what's going on, and his tentacles, if you will, touch all these same players. As we can work on, well, what is the measure? If you hear what he's about, and he's talking the same words, and they're foreign to America, by what measure is this SCO global governance going to operate while professing distinction from the other? And understand what I'm saying here. They've made it a false distinction between the other and the SCO, the NATO and the SCO. They're the same essential thing. Not just NATO, it's what they're professing now to protect. NATO was supposed to be up against Russia. It's now been morphed into also an economic defense, which is why the EU, the economic union, the European Union economic force there is now kind of being absorbed and doing that now, picking that up. So let's hear from another observer recently hitting the stage for our entertainment. And even though I agree with what this guy says about Palestine, remember, truth can be the bait hiding the hook. An apparent promotion of the SEO as a distinction in the world to free it from the clutches of the financial global order going through the gate the Zionist Federation Movement players have opened. We got that still at play here, all wrapped up into this eventually. The SEO steps in where UN has failed. The SEO has condemned Israel and the U.S. for their attack on Iran in June. In a joint statement, they said that such aggressive actions against civilian targets, including nuclear energy infrastructure, which resulted in civilian death, constitute a gross violation of the principles and norms of international law and infringe on Iran's sovereignty. The SEO's condemnation of Israeli and U.S. strikes on Iran marks a turning point, Saeed Mohammed Morandi, Tehran University professor and political analyst, told Sputnik. This is what we should have seen from the United Nations. Instead, the SCO and BRICS are emerging as the real alternative. A real alternative to the UN, really? The key takeaways. The West wars, sanctions, and support for apartheid regimes are pushing nations together and marginalizing the very institutions it built after World War II. Iran's membership in the SCO shows its people are not isolated. They have the backing of countries representing the global majority. Asia's rise is unstoppable. New trade corridors, Belt and Road, and collective security are shielding nations from Western disruption. The SCO is shifting into a real force. Security, economic integration, and independence from Western financial institutions. But what security? Is that plan to be enforced with the borscht and porridge? Randy says, thanks to the West's own foolish behavior, the SCO is becoming a central pillar of peace, security, and prosperity across Asia and beyond. And I hope some of you that have been listening to me or do your studies about this problem understand what these words are. And they're not, again, they're euphemisms. Whether this gentleman knows that or not, I don't know. But prosperity is not what it seems. Those of you that have studied A21 or listened to me talk about it and point to you when I read the documents, know that. Asia and beyond, not even limited to 1 inch, if you listen there. Where have we heard of that prosperity before but the 2030 coming on us? The real organizational alternative to the UN failure to prosperity, defined as shared responsibility or austerity, perpetual indebtedness to ostensibly the global Gaia cults by the West, will be the same austerity imposed by the East, so-called, that Jeffrey Sachs, an economist, espouses the same global values. Is that a coincidence, or is that a plan? Remember, I've asked, by whose impartial measure? There is only peace where you comply with your oppressor in these matters. And in that light, until all are oppressed, the professed intention to future peace provides the pretext for war in any of the 17 Sustainable Development Goal objectives by color-coded revolution that the UN promotes. So while this is being promoted as an alternative to a failed UN, it is nothing more than the device to bring nations into global financial system fold admitted to by the Trilateral Partnership. And it isn't a mere rhetoric. I've exposed behind a woodshed the deeds of each of these countries toward the fulfillment of what is described as a failed UN. But take note, the UN described as failed is the Security Council, which, failed as it is, was never set up as an economic organization. We see economics and security being combined in the CSO under the goals of the Sustainable Development Program of the UN that we know through the A2030 is a program of shared economic and other debt to a private third-party global overlord that intends that you have no property and like it. That you have no property even in yourself and you'll like it. Or else. And so what is this Xi Jinping's offer to the world that isn't already existing? China's new global governance, what is it exactly? Beijing's model focuses on things the West's rules-based order has forgotten: equality, law, and common development. So if you can't hear communism at least in that, I don't know what more to say. But equality, law, and common development, do not forget to ask the question, by whose standard and to what purpose? At a time when Western capitals increasingly seek to drive wedges among developers' powers, such encounters highlight the SCO's capacity to promote reconciliation and strengthen unity. Where have we heard that unity before? Promoting unity, I mean, on and on, just as the Holy See does? What's the common denominator with all this? China used the Tianjin Summit to introduce its Global Governance Initiative, GGI, a framework aimed at addressing structural flaws in the current international order. The GGI is built on 5 core principles: sovereign equality, international rule of law grounded in the UN Charter, multilateralism as the basis of governance, and people-centered approach that prioritizes common development, and pragmatism focused on measurable outcomes. You say people-centered, but you don't hear anything to the people themselves, do you? Beijing has identified the global financial system, artificial intelligence, cyberspace, climate change, international trade, and outer space as priority areas for rulemaking. The GGI's overarching goal is to create new institutions and norms that better represent the global South, restore the UN's centrality, and increase the effectiveness of governance mechanisms. Understand, they're not talking government here anymore either. Strictly bureaucratic. So let us chew again on that word, world salad. Beijing has identified the global financial system, artificial intelligence, cyberspace, and climate change. So as I pointed out, this purportedly new multipolar system does not rid itself of the existing global financial system. No, it's the first one in the list, which will be administered second by artificial intelligence, so-called intelligence, through cyberspace, the third in the list, obligated to the fraud of climate change, which is not about the weather, is no different a system than Trump is currently onshoring and enduring the effectiveness of governance mechanisms. Domestic militarization, while denying he is doing that, calling people seeing through this deception stupid. And even while this article frames it as a conflict, a contradiction, that the U.S. and its allies that undermine the United Nations in various ways to preserve their hegemony, block genuine democracy in international relations, take note, whether through dictatorship of genuine democracy, liberal democracy, or direct democracy, democracy is a weapon used to subdue and conquer the Constitutional Republic, and we, the oh-so-ignorant people. It is no coincidence that China chose the SCO summit as the venue to inaugurate the Global Governance Initiative. For Beijing, the SCO is more than a regional body. It is a prototype of a future global governance pattern, which makes it a regional body. It's more. It's almost the center of the universe. Now, and no different, but it's a prototype, like the enforcement models Trump is implementing to make Americans grovel again. And while the Pomeranians cheer the assault of due process and the presumption of innocence, at the very least, or the lack of property required in the future, the community of the they want for you. The symbolism is powerful. By placing the SCO at the heart of its vision, Beijing is signaling that it sees the organization not just as a Eurasian platform, but as a cornerstone of global transformation. The SCO, in this framing, is both a laboratory for new ideas and a new vehicle for implementing them. So you can read laboratory to mean innovation, getting the lab rats to pay to and implement the experimental vision and global transformation. So wow, so sustainable. Right, Doge? Together, these proposals form the intellectual and policy foundation for Xi's broader concept of building a community with a shared future for mankind. And so, Agenda 2030, a shared future debt obligation for mankind, says the community of the globular humanistas, right, Elon Musk? Thanks, Xi. Thanks, Putin. Thanks, Trump. And if there's any doubt about the West and the Russians' embrace of the future that they want, remember, there's all the orthodoxy and values they talk about that people are running to as well, making the United States is making itself look stupid and valueless. And so Putin comes up to wave the flag. Let's have some traditional values. This is not where they're going. Putin hails China's global governance proposal. Not government, on top of that. But who would want one anyway? Again, this indicates what style of rule is going to happen. It's going to be bureaucratic in governance. The initiative is aimed at fostering positive collaboration between countries that attended the latest SCO summit, the Russian president has said. Russian President Vladimir Putin has reiterated his support for China's proposed global governance reform project, hailing it as a timely initiative aimed at promoting positive ties between the countries that attended the latest Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit in Tianjin. Putin also stressed that the multipolar world, being proposed by Moscow in Beijing, and the new global governance system, would not entail the rise of new hegemons. Quote, all countries participating in international communication should have equal rights and occupy an equal position, the Russian president said. Can you say economic or financial parity when you listen to that? Equally sharing third-party sustainability debt obligations to the occupied in right and position in efforts to establish a more just and equitable global governance system subject to the chosen existing global financial system. I hope you're all picking up the consistency with the words that they're using and the sustainability that I've exposed to you over the decades now, a decade and a half, on how this is all working that, again, Trump is bringing in. This is the big issue, whether people want to recognize this or not. This is coming in, whether Trump even knows. As I said, I don't think Trump has a clue. He's not that intelligent, it seems to me. For all the people that I will insult and have turn away or not listen or whatever, those that you stick around, you know what I'm saying. You know there's a right way to do stuff, and we're not watching it. You're watching the incremental takeover of the world, and it's end up being what they've been saying in the plans written for us. It's nothing hidden. That it's an economic servitude. That's why partly I say get your own back to your own solid money, sound money. Get back to that. It'd be very hard for them to do a bunch of this stuff if a body of people, a population of people, knew about how to keep their distance by doing that. Because where does it go? Digital, right? Siberian gulag. Trump not concerned by Russia-China partnership. The United States president made the remark in a reference to Russian President Vladimir Putin's four-day visit to Beijing. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he's not worried about Chinese-Russia ties, insisting that America has the world's strongest military. He made the comment on Tuesday in response to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit, where Russian President Vladimir Putin held talks with Chinese leader Xi Jinping, who called him his old friend. Resorting to his own military, would Trump be a peacemaker there? Just the immediate answer is to go to the military? I'll let you ponder that. In an interview with the Scott Jennings radio show, Trump was asked if he was concerned about an axis forming against the United States with China and Russia. The president responded, I am not concerned at all, adding, we have the strongest military in the world by far. They would never use their military on us, believe me. But also Trump, sounding like a star-crossed lover, on Wednesday, Trump posted a Truth Social during the parade that Xi, Putin, and Kim Jong-un from North Korea were conspiring against Washington. He congratulated Xi, honored Americans who died in China's quest for victory and glory, and wrote, "Please give my warmest regards to Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un as you conspire against the United States." To which slight, Russia, the Russian presidential aide, Yuri Ushakov, graciously responded that he hoped Trump had made the comments in jest. He stressed that nobody is plotting any conspiracies and added that everyone understood the role played by the United States, the Trump administration, and the president personally in international affairs. And we want to make up some stuff there. They know the role the United States is playing in this global coagulation and blood clot? Of course they do. Of course Trump wouldn't be concerned if that's what where it's going and everything's on course. But he does point out about this military problem, doesn't he? He does respond. But also Trump ordered Pentagon to deter Russia and China, says Hegseth. United States Defense Secretary blamed Biden-era policies for bringing Moscow and Beijing closer. Washington is seeking to restore deterrence against both Russia and China, U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has said. Moscow and Beijing have described their relations as a strategic partnership without limits. After the West imposed sweeping sanctions, sanctimonious is Trump, we sweeping sanctions in response to Ukraine's conflict in 2022, Russia's redirected much of its trade and supply chains toward China. Both countries have condemned Washington's Cold War mentality and pledged to work toward a fairer, more equitable model of international relations. So remember, this was all instigated over there in Ukraine by the United States. And I was telling you way back around 2010, 2011, and moving into 2014 or 15, Russia and China were on the move to make themselves independent of the financial structure in that debt obligation balance to the United States. They can't have this non-parity system, as I've suggested to you. So you heard a lot of that in the conversation in the last tab, but that's what they're actually moving toward. Again, China, Xi Jinping's plan, puts the global financial system as number one, right on top. And from what Trump ordering the deterrence of Russia and China, though it's not a concern, he says, also Trump. China responds, Beijing's missile fashion week, China shows the U.S. who's boss. Now we're getting back into what I've been talking about. They're not going to allow me to remove the nuclear glowing from my intro, are they? No, we're going to play that game on the stage. Everyone have their role. China has showcased advanced laser weapons and new missiles. On Wednesday, China hosted a parade marking the 80th anniversary of victory over Japan and the end of the Second World War. I'm just reading some of that, reminding myself, you know, that China lost more people in that war than Russia lost defeating what they thought was defeat, well, defeating Hitler at least, not Nazism. But they lost more people than Russia in defending their country. And not getting into the politics of it, just the fact of the loss of people. Throwing that many people to maintain your identity, your sovereignty, I guess, if we can put it that way. The event is Beijing Tiananmen Square's demonstration cutting-edge net innovations developed by China's military-industrial complex with lessons learned from contemporary military conflicts. The parade featured new armored vehicles, laser weapons, and missiles that could play a crucial role in potential conflict with the U.S. So as I said in prior episodes, countries have said and now ready themselves to insist that enough is enough. We're not putting up with it, and we're not going to continue to put up with it. And it isn't looking good for Trump on the 24-hour to peace front in the Ukraine, as also discussed by sustainability economist Sachs. I really have to stress, this is interesting character to come on the stage all this time now with this strife. And that's what he's been promoting. And now we see it developing in Russia in China, they said it years ago, and I was reporting on that. Now it's an issue for them, the whole organization, to counter the other, the NATO, which is also should not exist. And so we see the good cop, bad cop being developed for our entertainment. It has to be. Zelensky may be slowing down peace process due to corruption issues, says Sachs. The Economist, no less, says this. Volodymyr Zelensky is avoiding real steps toward resolving the conflict with Russia for a number of reasons, including corruption. Well-known U.S. economist and director of the Center of Sustainable Development at Columbia University, Jeffrey Sachs, said. You see how they throw that in there? You see how they just drop that seed and water it and fertilize it? And in the news across the world, and the other majority, global majority, they're now talking about implementing this whole plan as a new plan. And you listen to all the words, and it's in the same area, the same discussion as everybody else has been doing. The United States was defeated by what Jefferson Mining District sued to highlight it in 2013. For those of you that haven't heard that, why I talk about this, I've got a little bit of experience in the analysis of this and what they do, and they do it in your states already. It's in the law already. You're being subsumed. You're being taken over. It's not hard to see once you see it. You can't forget it once you see it. You can't unsee this. But you see that once you see it, you see the promotion. And this is where it comes in. So it irritates me. I kind of like Jeffrey Sachs, I guess. And to see him pulling this off, it irritates me to no end. To see him in this position to do this irritates me. It's just another deception, another type of deceiver. Nice and intelligent as the guy might be. The interview happened ahead of Eastern Economic Forum, which will be held in Vladivostok from September 3rd to the 6th. The Economist is going to participate in the UN session, UN Development Agenda, beyond 2030. Zelensky's, for whatever reason, out of his personal belief or fear for his life or corruption or other motivations, does not even make one inch towards the reality of the settlement. The Europeans, Macron, the German Chancellor Merz, and Starmer, are the same way, Sachs says. The Economist noted that his intransigence had left many issues unresolved following the Alaska summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russia President Vladimir Putin. So, in this sense, the only thing that was clarified in Alaska is that the United States is not going to pay for the Ukraine war, but everything else remains unsettled, he added. The Zelensky Yehu in Ukraine, using the tactic of perpetual war to evade justice, as the Zionist Federation Movement mass murderer and war criminal Satan Yehu is doing. And I disagree, though, with Sustainability SAC. There was at least one other thing clarified in Alaska. And that was Trump's understanding about Russia and its needs, which Trump reflected immediately at the podium. What was clarified to Trump is that he and Pinocchio Lenski have no cards. Are you understanding this now, folks? How he's reframing it is not really what it happens either, even though he's trying to explain stuff. Sachs is pretty good at explaining things. That's why I kind of like him. Like I say kind of, because he's got this cancer attached to him. And he promotes it. And it's promoted about him and what he promotes. And it's given credibility. And if you listen to the words that have been said by Russia and China, especially if you're a Pomeranian, you should be highly critical of what this guy says, that he says at all, what Trump is doing, and how they're bringing on this global financial system and the future that they want. You may get mad at me, but I haven't found myself to be wrong, and no one has pointed out what I've done over these decades and a half to be wrong about what I've observed and seen and studied, and to be correct. I'm open to be corrected, but that doesn't come. That hasn't shown up yet. And I guess at the time I start to make that many errors, I probably stop broadcasting. But right now, this is exactly going the way they were telling us. This has not been a secret. Once you see that the plan is going on target, then you wonder what all this distraction is. You see it as distraction. And a free people cannot be sustainability-ized. You cannot be subdued by this thing. And I think that we are. Look how quick the Pomeranians are agreeing to having due process destroyed, to having the standing army built right in their own towns. I don't know that wasn't all a play. You have all the big cities letting themselves get run down so this can be brought on because the military's been in charge the whole time and told them to do so. Defense Department to send up to 600 military attorneys to serve as temporary immigrant judges. The Defense Department is considering authorizing up to 600 military attorneys to serve as temporary immigration judges, a defense official confirmed. Chief Pentagon spokesman Sean Parnell said in a statement that at least the request of the Justice Department, at the request of the Justice Department, the Defense Department is in a process of identifying qualified judge advocates and civil attorneys for details to serve as temporary immigration judges. Did you hear the combination there? They're going to put civilian attorneys on the detail as well. I don't know what more to say. We see the clues of the connection, and what we call civil is not. It's always under the control of the military. It's like there's no difference when they need to have something happen. We don't see a separation between your civilian life, your civil life, and your military life. Parnell said the Defense Department attorneys would help with the backlog of cases by presiding over immigration hearings. The immigration courts are struggling with a backlog of more than 3.4 million cases. But the plan to turn possibly hundreds of military lawyers into immigration judges comes after the Trump administration has fired more than 24 immigration judges nationwide so far this year. I've heard up the number, there's been up to 100 people in the immigration system fired relative to this. Unlike a federal district court judges, immigration judges work for the Justice Department. Judge Advocate General Corps officers were tasked with providing legal support to service members and their families or advising commanders on the legalities of warfare. The defense lawyers would likely need to undergo some training in immigration law, procedure, and policy. The Trump administration loosened the job requirements for temporary immigration judges last month, allowing a wider group of government lawyers to handle cases in immigration court. Its new rule, published in the Federal Register in late August, states that the Justice Department, quote, no longer believes the restriction of temporary immigration judges to current department employees with a threshold level of immigration law experience serves the Executive Office for Immigration Review's interests. Trump, essentially. And what are those interests, actually? If you can read the between the lines on this stuff, you see what's going on. And why the military comes right to mind. And when the homegrown of the day don't meet the ever-changing ever-changing interests, what then? Or where Trump just advanced the people should lose their citizenship for expressing themselves? Previously, only Justice Department lawyers with a decade of immigration law experience and former immigration judges could fill those roles. More roles, more stage, more theater. What are we going to do? We go sugarcoat it too? The American Immigration Lawyers Association criticized the plan in a statement after the new rule was published. Quote, while DOD attorneys may be well suited to handle military matters, immigration law is entirely different and exceptionally complex. It makes as much sense to have a cardiologist do a hip replacement. The work of immigration judges has been described as a life and death decision in traffic court. In traffic court conditions, the statement continued. I want everyone to listen very carefully on the connections that are being made. Because this is what happens if I get to the tab. We are watching another thing that just happened. Just because, apparently. Expecting fair decisions from judges unfamiliar with law is absurd. This reckless move guts due process and further undermines the integrity of our immigration court system. The group called on Congress to use its oversight powers, quote, to defend the rule of law and protect the independence of the immigration judiciary. In Florida, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has already proposed loaning National Guard troops to the federal government for use as immigration judges. If you're waiting on your states to defend you, there's your little notice that it's not going to happen. Remember, we're not talking here about, you're all migrants, I'll just put it that way, the other way. We're not talking about these so-called illegals, because a lot of them are already in the process, and they're being defiled and destroyed, even though they're compliant. We're talking about the homegrown. When they start turning the guns, as I've been talking over and over, years and years now, they turn the guns into the gate, like we're seeing happening. Why, you're not supposed to have standing armies focused on you. He said in May that his office had submitted a proposal to the Trump administration that would activate the 9 Florida National Guard members who are Judge Advocate General Corps officers, to serve as immigration judges, which legal experts told CBS News is unprecedented. Typically, when National Guard troops help after a hurricane or secure a protest site, they remain under the command of their state governor under Title 32 of the United States Code, which I suggest go read and familiarize yourself. Like I've said over and over, familiarize yourself with all these codes and statutes. Yes, just the codes and statutes. You need to understand what the occupier and how is doing and how they're operating. And you need to speak through that language. So it behooves everybody to become familiar with the process and procedures. Under DeSantis' plan, the state would relinquish control of these officers to Washington. Title 10 would snap into place, reassigning the JAG officers under the command of the President and Defense Secretary. So commissioned military officers in civil government's position. Really? That's making America great again? Or is that the second evidence of that the federal government, through Donald Deep State Trump, pulling the mask off the Lincolnized, militarized United States plantation? But most of y'all, not listening, as you've been told behind the woodshed, thought was the land of the free and the home of the brave. Finding out it's rather the land of the fee and tax home of the slave. And I've read you the documents. This grants them eligibility to serve as federal immigration judges appointed by the U.S. Attorney General. The Justice Department will pick up the tab for the operation if adopted. It plans to train the officers over 6 weeks. A crash course in immigration law procedure and policy. Each officer would need to pass a written exam before donning the judge's robe. Yeah, subtle. Donning the judge's robe. Donning Trump. Donnies. Just us. How is that justice? For expedience and convenience. Now, Melania Trump might sound sympathetic to the children in her peace letter to Trump. That he had to Trump to hand to Putin. But President Trump apparently didn't read that memo or doesn't think children are little goats. After Guatemalan kids put on planes, U.S. judge halts flights. After the U.S. government loaded children onto planes overnight to be sent back to their native Guatemala, a federal judge temporarily blocked the flights, with the youngsters still inside. As their attorney said, authorities were violating U.S. laws and sending vulnerable kids into potential peril. Life and death here, folks. This is not, it's no small matter, inconsequential matter, what's happening on the immigration front to people and the innocent. And watch, look across the world right now. Innocence is irrelevant to anything. And despite Melania's peace letter to Putin, the administration has been barred from deporting the kids, some as young as 10, for 14 days. The impact. For now, hundreds of Guatemalan children who arrived unaccompanied will stay while the legal fight plays out over the coming weeks. I do not want there to be any ambiguity, said Judge Sparkle L. Suchanan, who said her ruling applies broadly to Guatemalan minors who arrived in the United States without their parents and guardians. Just after the ruling, minutes after she wrapped up a hastily scheduled hearing Sunday afternoon, you get this, folks? The courts are open. If you go read closely, you'll see they're supposed to be open 24/7. You want to tell me why they close at 5? Well, roughly so. And on the weekends? See, justice is not supposed to be closed to us. Try to find a way to get justice when the door is closed. It has not been so easy. But anyway, minutes after she wrapped up her hastily scheduled hearing Sunday afternoon, 5 charter buses pulled up to a plane parked at the border area airport in Harlingen, Texas. Earlier Sunday, hours earlier, authorities had walked dozens of passengers, perhaps 50, toward the plane in a part of the airport that's restricted to government planes, including deportation flights. Passengers were wearing colored clothing that is used in government-run shelters for migrant children. And earlier Saturday, Shane and Aber Acacia Center for Justice, an immigrant legal defense group, said it has notified Saturday evening that an official list had been drafted with the names of the Guatemalan children who the United States administration would attempt to send back to their home country. Advocates learned that the flights would leave from Texas cities of Harlingen and El Paso. And earlier Friday, the Trump administration planning to remove nearly 700 Guatemalan children who came to the U.S. unaccompanied, according to a letter sent Friday by Senator Ron Wyden. The Guatemalan government has said it is ready to take them in. The Fed stance. The United States government insists it's reuniting the Guatemalan children with parents and guardians who sought their return. Lawyers for the at least some of the minors say that's nonsense and argue that in any event, authorities are depriving them of due process by preventing them from pursuing asylum claims or immigration relief. Remember, they've said, even though it's administrative, immigration law is very complex and very specialized. And that's not because they made it up for Trump. It's been that way because case law has built to build this thing, to build in the safeguards that are under the Constitution proper to be given to people underneath the statutory law of immigration. And they want to put a bunch of people that know nothing about this and in control of people's lives who might have claims that are legitimate. And it doesn't sound like there's a small amount of people that are legitimate. It wasn't an issue until it started to become an issue. So what does Trump have against lawful due process? Is why Trump does not intend to make America great again. Like Satan Yehu doesn't intend to genocide Palestinians. It's the same tactic. Are we listening? Are we observing? And yet, the UK is trying to atone for its sins better than Trump denying visas to all Palestinians, even children needing hospital care. Right, Melania? The UK to treat children from Gaza, ripping Israel for blocking aid. The shame and embarrassment of the lack of affirmative action despite every international law and duty and obligation as people voice their contempt appears to be having an effect, even if the Trump administration won't, because that's the way a genuine peace faker flies. British officials are working to get critically sick and injured children out of Gaza for the specialist treatment of the UK hospitals, the British Foreign Secretary said Monday, adding that the first patients will arrive in coming weeks. David Lammy said he was outraged by Israel not allowing enough aid to enter Gaza as he announced $20 million more for medical assistance for Gaza and the region. It doesn't sound like he was outraged about the genocide, though, does it? Let's blow them up. If they survive, we'll fix them a little bit so we can blow them up. This is not a natural disaster. It's a man-made famine in the 21st century, he said. I'm outraged by the Israeli government's refusal to allow insufficient aid, Lammy added. We all know there is only one way out, an immediate ceasefire. These people do nothing to promote something, to promote an agenda. But maybe instead he should repent that the UK initiated the illegal belligerent occupation and restore Palestine to the Palestinians in whole and relocate the Zionist Federation political movement to a small rock outcropping in the South China Sea, and let anyone that wants to migrate to Palestine do so peacefully and pursuant to local Palestinian immigration law, like we do at home, right, Trump? Let me tell lawmakers that British officials are also supporting students from Gaza who have been granted scholarships at UK universities so that they can start their studies in fall. Lamy said the massive humanitarian response is needed to prevent more Palestinians from dying and starving after the world's leading authority on food crises said in late August that the Gaza Strip's largest city is in the grips of famine. Folks, can you believe this in 2025 that we are hearing this at all? Famine. Thought we got our lessons in Biafra. I guess not. Well, after all that modernization and food security in the United States as well, that's starving you to death today. But Home Security Yvette Cooper told Parliament on Monday that officials are expediting visas for those Palestinians as well as their accompanying family members. Officials have said that they will not give specifics on the evacuation process because the situation is sensitive and complex. Now, why would that be? Other European nations, including Italy, have also evacuated students and sick children from Gaza. None of those, however, having the obligation and duty under international law to stop the genocide or war crimes or any of it, have done so. And certainly, First Lady Melania Trump wasn't provided the memo regarding the peace for the Palestinian children, free from worry of famine. As we read, the United States was the only UN Security Council, UNSC member state, not a nation here, just a state, governance, remember, see how they work that, member state that refused to endorse a joint declaration on the ongoing famine in the Gaza Strip. Can I read that again? The United States was the only UN Security Council member that refused to endorse a joint declaration of the ongoing famine in Gaza Strip. Earlier, the UNSC convened a session to discuss the Middle East and Palestinian issues. The discussions mainly revolved around the reports of famine in the Palestinian enclave, as well as the Israeli double strike on the Nasser Hospital, which left dozens of dead and wounded, including journalists. And then they did it again in another place. And then they did it again. And the last report was, they told all the Palestinians, here, go get your food and your water. When they all got there, they bombed those people. During his intervention, Israeli permanent representative to the UN, Danny Dannon, alleged that while the UN's integrity food security phase classification was conducted to surveys in Gaza, it chose to hide an appendix that reportedly showed no famine in the enclave. The envoy further urged the IPC to rescind its gross and fraudulent report. On Friday, the UN World Food Program confirmed catastrophic levels of famine in the Gaza Strip for the first time since the conflict began in 2023. According to the IPC, there are five phases of malnutrition, with phases from 3 to 5 marking severe food deprivation. WFP's latest analysis shows that the conditions in the Gaza Strip are now sufficient to declare the most extreme category of famine. By the end of September, more than 640,000 people across the Palestinian enclave will face catastrophic levels of food insecurity classified as IPC Phase 5. Now, why aren't they also pointing out that maybe we can just stop the bombing of those people, the genocide against those people, and maybe that will be a way to cure and stop the famine? So they don't. They're just a disgrace here. Trump and the Trump administration is an international disgrace. And people expect better from these degenerates at home? How about the time homegrown stupid people, as Trump already identifies them? I mean, beyond the worst criminals. I hope people are picking up the consistency for all the flip-flopping this guy does. The consistency on this point. So I'm not sure that what Melania Trump's peace letter intention is regarding children all over the world, as we see Netanyahu says Trump told him no partial deals, go with full force in Gaza. At a security cabinet meeting on Sunday night, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told his top officials that he had the backing of President Trump to reject a temporary Gaza ceasefire deal and to escalate military operations in Gaza. Quote, forget the partial deals. Go in with full force. Finish it. Netanyahu said, relaying what Trump told him. Hamas recently accepted a proposal for a 60-day ceasefire during which the two sides are meant to negotiate a long-term truce and 10 Israeli captives would be released. The U.S. and Israel previously proposed virtually identical deal, but despite that, Israel hasn't responded to Hamas and is pushing ahead with a massive escalation to take over Gaza City. Trump is backing Israelis' plans to conquer Gaza City after a UN and U.S.-backed hunger monitors determined famine was taking place in the area due to the Israeli siege. Israel's plan involved the forced displacement of more than 1 million civilians sheltering in Gaza City, followed by the complete destruction of the city, and starving them wherever they are going to be displaced to. Let all hell break loose. The Gaza ceasefire and how we all got played. Trump gives Israel the green light to rain fire and hell on Gaza. New manager, same empire. The ceasefire agreement between Israel and Gaza in late January 2025 was paraded by Western media as a diplomatic breakthrough that might finally curb the bloodshed, a potential turning point for peace in the region. But within weeks, the grim reality became undeniable. This was never about peace. It was a strategic pause, a bait and switch, where Israeli regroups, the world looks away, and the Palestinians brace for the next onslaught. Ceasefires typically conjure images of humanitarian relief and de-escalation, respites from violence leading to lasting peace. For the U.S. and Israel, they serve as a darker purpose, strategic pauses that enable the consolidation of power, territorial expansion, and preparation for further violence, as detailed in their analysis. Don't forget Ukraine. Rather than a step-forward resolution, the ceasefire served as little more than a PR maneuver, masking an ongoing cycle of destruction and displacement of the Palestinian people and the broader Arab region. This cycle is enabled by both sides of the United States political establishment, who continue to push the narrative that, quote, every single thing that is happening in Gaza is happening because of Hamas. As State Department spokeswoman Tammy Bruce recently said in a response to the news that 15 Palestinian rescue workers and medics were executed by the Israelis one by one, their bodies in clearly marked vehicles were then dumped in a mass grave. The message is clear. Palestinian lives are disposable, and Washington exists to provide alibis for their extermination while using the American public to work and pay for it. A lot like sustainability already and leverage funding, doesn't it? Get the Americans to pay for it. To your detriment. The facade has collapsed. What we are witnessing is not a conflict spiraling out of control, but a calculated campaign laundered through the language of diplomacy, regardless of which party occupies the White House. Both parties serve the interests of a small, powerful elite rather than the American public or anyone critical of Israel and U.S. foreign policy. The consistency of these actions reflect broader geopolitical interests, an unyielding drive to control, military superiority, and economic dominance, all for profit and power, perpetuating cycles of violence under the guise of protecting security and stability. And I remind you of what I was speaking about when I entered into the broadcast and talking about the latent military problem in the other, reflected by the CSO from Russia, Xi Jinping, and India. In the final message from one of the recent Palestinian journalists directly targeted by the IDF, I ask you now, do not stop speaking out about Gaza. Do not let the world look away. Keep fighting, keep telling our stories until Palestine is free. For the last time, Hassam Shabbat from northern Gaza. And that was one of the victims of that assault. This is BTWRLM 644. And with the constant, consistent reporting about the plight of Palestine and the Semitic Palestinians behind the woodshed and elsewhere, Maybe the tide is turning. Exclusive, Trump acknowledges Israel is losing control of Congress. Do you believe that? Israel's losing admitted control of your government? President Donald Trump told the Daily Caller that the Israel lobby is losing influence over Congress during an interview Friday. There's a head fake here, folks. Look, listen to what this guy's saying. Listen to what's going on. Watch the government. See what's going on. Who controls what? Who's influencing what? And this guy has the audacity to say this in an interview. The Daily Caller, White House correspondent Regan Reese, sat down with Trump for an hour in the Oval Office Friday afternoon. A March Pew Research Center poll that found support for Israel among young Republicans is slipping. The president acknowledged that he was aware of this trend and explained to the caller that Israel's ironclad support in Congress is a thing of the past. The following is an unedited excerpt from the caller's conversation with the president. A full transcript will be made available Monday evening. For those of you that are waiting for that, I'll have that a tab for that, the blogcaster. But for this moment, there's a growing group within the MAGA, America First Coalition, Republicans, especially younger Republicans, who are skeptical of our support of Israel. Are you aware of this group, and are you worried about it? Trump answers, yeah, I'm aware of it. So Israel is amazing, because, you know, I have good support from Israel. I have. Look, nobody has done more for Israel than I have, including the recent attacks with Iran. Wiping that thing out. That plane wiped them out like nobody ever saw before. So Trump did another favor for Israel, but not because America needed to, or even to make accounting for the waste of money to bomb Iran. Why didn't he pay for this private favor? Trump continued. You know, we got back and CNN was trying to say, well, maybe it wasn't complete, and it turned out totally complete, beyond complete. But if you go back 20 years, I will tell you, Israel had the strongest lobby in Congress of anything or body or of any company or corporation or state that I've ever seen. Israel was the strongest. Today, it doesn't have the strong lobby. It's amazing. You're too young to know this, but if you go back 15 years, probably that's when it started, right? Israel, you would understand this very much, Israel was the strongest lobby I've ever seen. They had total control over Congress, and now they don't, you know, and I'm a little surprised to see that. But later on, and he returns, but Israel was the strongest lobby 50 years ago that there has ever been, and now it's been hurt, especially in Congress. If you can believe AIPAC is losing influence, these foreign agents babysitting compromised Congress criminals are getting ready to reorganize or to hide themselves, so Trump downplays the overbearing influence here, maybe, you think? But why should they? They are in control. And I have that link for you to the full interview. There's a whole lot more said in there. If you wish to see it, it will be in the blogcaster. It's the full transcript. And it just comes the way that the Daily Caller must be just a propaganda piece, a mouthpiece for the White House. Chickens beginning to roost for a serial mass murderer at home, it seems, or foxes to the rescue to watch over the hen house. Trump demands makers justify success of COVID vaccines. President Trump took to his social media platform Monday with a question for pharmaceutical companies. Can they justify the success of their COVID-19 vaccines? It is very important that the drug companies justify the success of their various COVID drugs, Trump said on Truth Social Post. Many people think they are a miracle that saved millions of lives. Others disagree, with the CDC being ripped apart over the question, I want the answer. I want it now. Trump added, I have been shown information from Pfizer and others that is extraordinary, but they never seem to show these results to the public. Why not? They got off to the next hunt and let everyone rip themselves apart, including Bobby Kennedy Jr. and the CDC, trying to figure out the success or failure of the drug company's COVID work. They show me great numbers and results, but they don't seem to be showing them to many others. During his first term, Trump championed Operation Warp Speed to speed up the vaccine development. The rollout, however, didn't happen until the Biden administration, and by then, many Trump supporters were strongly opposed to the vaccine. In his Trump social post, Trump urged the drug companies to show the results in the CDC and the public to clear up this mess one way or the other. He added, "I hope Operation Warp Speed was as brilliant as many say it was. If not, we all want to know about it and why." Trump's demand as the CDC faces internal upheaval following recent policy revisions related to vaccine access. Last week, the FDA announced new restrictions on updated COVID vaccines. It's not clear exactly what data Trump wants the companies to release. Independent studies have credited COVID-19 vaccination campaigns with saving millions of lives during the pandemic. Now is immediate. All he has to do is go to any Behind the Woodshed broadcast, and he'd hear the now. And faster than that, he could just go to his local communicable disease law right there in Washington, D.C. Even there, folks. As I said, everywhere it's the same, relatively the same. The rules of implementation were a little different, but everywhere was the same. And he'll notice he can't call them vaccines. He'll notice that because of federal law, then, if they don't have the dual use, they're bioweapons. Maybe that's why the numbers aren't being shown. But I've been through this. He's talking now to distance himself. He had no authority, folks. He had no authority to do what he did. That was reserved to the states by the constitutional establishment that Trump wants to destroy at every turn and test at every turn and take away your inviolable rights at every turn. Trump previously called mRNA vaccines a medical miracle. Now RFK Jr. cut $500 million in funding. Health officials during the first term said mRNA shots are safe and effective. When the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine was authorized for emergency use, that's another fraud. They denied every other valid use of treatment. Remember? You don't hear that being talked about. Authorized for emergency use by the Food and Drug Administration in December 2020, President Donald Trump referred to it as a miracle, a medical miracle. And this is one of the greatest scientific accomplishments in history, he said. It will save millions of lives and soon end the pandemic once and for all, Trump said at the time in the speech delivered to the Oval Office. Pandemic was not his jurisdiction. This issue was not his jurisdiction. Pandemics are no it was in no jurisdiction of the United States. COVID-19 vaccines made the mRNA technology were quickly rolled out, with the then Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar referring to the vaccine as a safe and extraordinarily effective. However, last week, current Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that the government was canceling at least $500 million in federally funded mRNA vaccine development, potentially affecting U.S. preparedness for future pandemics and squashing enthusiasm for technology that has been hailed as a potential promise for cancer and HIV vaccines. That sounds good, right? So why has Moderna's mNEXT spike just been approved, as I reported last episode? And why is mNEXT spike still referred to as a vaccine when it is a prohibited bioweapon as a matter of law? And I hope you're seeing the distraction on all this. I hope you're seeing they focus on something that's not really the answer for us. And I've pointed this out over and over, not on just on this issue, on lots of issues. And based on all this, and this whitewashing that goes on, more catbox cover-up, not getting to the initial point, actually stepping away, and so there's no accountability. Florida moves to scrap all state vaccine mandates. And everybody goes, yay! But they could not put a mandate. There's no authority in state law for that, even though the power for the health is reserved to the states. Go read the communicable disease law. First of all, there had to be a vaccine. And secondly, the choice is not to the state. The choice is between the doctor and ultimately the patient. And it's a choice. It's not one only. Go read the communicable disease law. And people do not respond to me when I say to do that. They don't say, oh, thank you for pointing that out. And you know, I read this and this. You're right. But it's right. Or I read this, you're wrong. Nobody responds. And the lack of that knowledge is going to hurt people, because in there was the simple way to get out what a threat is that gives police power to the state. That's the thing that Trump's violating too. So that anybody who hasn't read that doesn't have the basics of what constitutes a police power. And what you heard last episode was the court coming back and said you can't use that power. You can't use that excuse to invoke that power. Is this discussion? Florida moves to scrap all state vaccine mandates. State Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo announced the planned change. Florida is poised to wipe its vaccine mandates off the books. And the State Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo announcing Wednesday that all requirements, including those for school children against diseases like measles and polio, are set to end. Ladapo didn't offer details on the process or the timeline for when the changes would take effect, but he did have some strong words. All of them, he said, of the vaccine mandates that would go during a news conference to applause. Every last one of them is wrong and drips with disdain and slavery. Quote, who am I as a government or anyone else? Who am I as a man standing here now to tell you what you should put in your body? Who am I to tell you what your child should put in their body? I don't have that right. You want to put whatever different vaccines in your body? God bless you. I hope you make an informed decision. You don't want to put whatever vaccines in your body? God bless you. I hope you make an informed decision. That's how it should be. But he's lying here, isn't he? At least relative to the novel synthetic gene therapies he allowed to be used in the state, contrary to local communicable disease law in Florida during the great COVID swindle, that shows they are not vaccines. And that it's correct, who are you to tell anyone else, any government official, who are you, even as a surgeon general of the state, to tell anyone how to treat themselves, especially when any insistence is a violation of local law? Who are you indeed? I am not quibbling with that statement in him for today. I've sent him the ex-Twitters to tell them he was wrong after, in the middle, years ago, of what he did wrong. No response. Crickets. It was not my place to tell him, actually, where he has an official duty and obligation to have imposed the law, which would have told him he doesn't have that right, or even question, to make himself sound good, who he would be to tell somebody else. It's not in there. Why haven't these officials mentioned that law, evidencing the dereliction of duty of every health official in the state, as well as the governor? And it's not like he doesn't know this, as I've said. I've told him through ex-Twitter numerous times, to both of them, the governor and this Ladapo. Instead, the State Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo laments all this, instead of telling us what law he relied on to protect the people from bioweapons attack. That was not unknown before it began for anyone that gets behind the woodshed at all. Saw it a couple of months coming, didn't we? Why do they continue to call these novel lab-made synthetics vaccines? Why do they continue to obstruct the truth so people can make an actual informed decision? Why the appeal to imposition of disdain and slavery when it was the officials not following local communicable disease law that caused the consequent irreparable harms, death, and destruction, which could be predicted to be a bioweapons attack, as determined by that federal law, in the absence of a natural infectious agent non-fraudulently demonstrated. So this is surely more whitewashing that will not get to the core failures the abuse of state and county governments caused themselves, right, culpable State Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo. Seems they're trying to atone for the sins of the state and themselves for this many years after the fact, which is not accountability, but a cat box cover-up that will not avoid the problem in the future, where state officials sit on their hands as they and these officials and the DAPO did during the great COVID swindle, while an ignorant people were deceived and feared into the next attack were coming under the deceptive cover of choice that they're trying to promote right now, or where since that then that legislation of the rules have been adjusted to make real informed consent or the remedy to avoid any dereliction is rendered impossible, which will likely go before what is demonstrably a corrupt judicial branch, as evidenced by the lack of protection to the people during the great COVID swindle in light of the official dereliction of duty or compliance with the law. So this move is a lot too late and still not enough relative to the public and private corruption needing to be brought accountable so that it doesn't happen again. They're not getting to the core. They're not getting to the beginning. They're not informing people how they were supposed to get to the beginning. The mandates are a treatment. It's like the fifth step in the process. And I'm not sure if people appreciate how government does this, how people in government do that to slough off accountability. And this thing, whatever they rely on as an emergency, and this is for the police powers is what I'm concerned about, not just because it's a communicable disease. This just gave us a simple way to get at what was supposed to be done without all the question. What is police power and how is it invoked? And the reasons, and the valid reasons. Very simple. You're watching Trump expand this problem. Just makes a claim and then does what he does. And to hell with everything because that's what he wants. But we're going to see something else coming on, which I find interesting here relative to so-called COVID. Allergy nasal spray may help ward off COVID. Do I say no, duh? Allergy nasal spray may help ward off COVID. A widely available nasal spray used for allergies may offer unexpected protection against COVID, a new study suggests. Are you ahead of me on this one, folks? Before we go too far afield, remember, COVID was the disease. Let's get to the term. The term is communicable disease. This is the disease, the COVID, the name. The symptoms part. There was never a communicable part, the infectious agent non-fraudulently demonstrated as law requires. The symptoms for which was called COVID or COVID-19, and I made a further distinction. If you put COVID-19, it was really more flu-like, but if you just said COVID, you could see where there was more of a push toward the common cold. But these symptoms were called COVID. They're associated with the common cold or the seasonal flu or allergies. The response is caused by a functioning immune system. So is it fair to say that researchers found that an allergy medicine worked to reduce or eliminate those common cold symptoms? Researchers at Saarland University Hospital in Germany tested the antihistamine, azelastine, an over-the-counter product, on 450 adults, most in their early 30s. Half the group used the spray 3 times daily, while the rest received a placebo. Over nearly 2 months, the group using azelastine had a 2.2% COVID infection rate compared to 6.7% for those on the placebo. So how did they know what was COVID, even the infectious agent, when there is no test? Unless we're simply looking for respiratory difficulty, sneezing, coughing, stuffy head medicine type stuff to work on. The study published in JAMA Internal Medicine also found that azelastine appeared to lower the incidence of other respiratory infections. Scientists suggest the spray may prevent virus from attaching to the nasal lining and block key enzymes COVID uses to replicate. Now, how do symptoms use a thing and replicate? They just is. But suggestions aside, remember, there is no virus. No virus was non-fraudulently demonstrated by anyone, anywhere. Besides, the novel bioweapon replicates by instructing the body to reproduce itself. Remember? The processing, why it's called mRNA. Not sure they tested for that replication process, as this is not mentioned at all either. Another theory is that this interferes with the ACE2 receptor, which the virus uses to enter human cells. But still a theory regarding nothing shown to exist after all these safe and effective years. Quote, our findings suggest azelastine could serve as a scalable over-the-counter prophylactic against COVID, especially when community transmission is elevated or in a high-risk setting, such as crowded indoor events or traveling, says senior author Dr. Robert Bowles. However, he cautioned that the study was small and involved mostly young, healthy participants, so more research is needed, especially among older adults and those with weakened immune systems, per a university release. Now, how did they give them something they never identified as well? Bowles emphasized that the spray should not replace vaccine. Well, of course, it should not replace a vaccine. There are no vaccines as a matter of local communicable disease law, is there? But maybe this allergy medicine does block the entry by the shedded nanotechnology bioweapon. Maybe they're onto something on that. What do you think? Maybe just stay away from crowded events as many more or as much as possible. And stay away at least 6 feet, as the CDC warned those of us not jab harmed, so that we might avoid that novel lab-made privately owned protein shedder. And toward more equal justice, notwithstanding Donald, the Epstein files are a hoax, Trump. Epstein victims are making their own list, green volunteers to name names in Congress. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein's abuse urge the government to release all of its files on the sex trafficker Wednesday, and they said that they were compiling their own list of his associates. Together as survivors, we will confidentially compile the names who were regularly in the Epstein world, Lisa Phillips said at an emotional press conference on Capitol Hill. She said it might be too dangerous to release the list, but Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene volunteered to name names in Congress. Quote, I am not afraid to name names. If they want to give me a list, I will walk to the Capitol on the House floor and I will say every damn name, she said. I will be proud to do this. The survivors detailed the abuse that they had suffered from Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. I was once bright, fun, outgoing, kind, Liz Stein said. I loved people and people genuinely enjoyed being around me, but after meeting Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, it felt like someone shut off the lights to my soul. Jenna Lisa Jones said that the abuse started when she was 14. I had never been more scared in my life than I was the first time that he hurt me, she said. Courtney Wilde, who said that she was also abused at 14, had urged lawmakers to unite to demand the full release of the government files. This isn't a blue thing or a red thing, she said. This is an everyone thing. GOP Representative Tom Massie criticized the White House for opposing legislation to release the files, which was still short at least 2 Republican votes. He said there was a little new information in the batch of files released by the House panel on Tuesday. President Trump described calls to release the files a Democrat hoax that never ends on Wednesday. Asked about Trump's earlier hoax claims, Epstein victim Haley Robson said, she is a registered Republican and claims like Trump just makes you want to explode inside. Please humanize us, she said. Another victim, Shante Davis, said Epstein used to brag about his friendships with Trump and had signed photos of the two of them on his desk. That's all fine and dandy, but where is the evidence of the FBI's investigatively compiled list? And those comments, I didn't hear anybody mentioning anybody else but Epstein. And if that FBI investigation compiled list does not exist, why not? Who ordered that obstruction to making the list? And why? And why has no one come forward to explain why? Is the FBI complicit? Is it the continuing twisting arm for blackmail of a foreign interest? See, naming names still won't get at the systemic problem and corruption. So all this seems a whitewashed distraction. Now our brave and heroic representatives engage, but doesn't get at the core issues that allowed it, and unaccountably so, to me. How about you? And also Trump. Judge hands Harvard a huge win. She reverses Trump's $2.6 billion in research funding cuts. A federal judge in Boston on Wednesday ordered the reversal of Trump's administration's cuts to the more than $2.6 billion in funding for research grants for Harvard University. United States District Judge Allison Burroughs sided with the Ivy League school, ruling that cuts amounted to illegal retaliation for Harvard's rejection of White House demands for changes to its governance and policies. The ruling delivers a significant victory to Harvard in its battle with the Trump administration, which also has sought to prevent the school from hosting foreign students and threatening to revoke its tax-exempt status. The government had tied the freezes at Harvard to delays in dealing with anti-Semitism on its campus, but the judge said the federally funded research had little connection to anti-Semitism. So listen very carefully about what's going on. This is the problem of the homegrown. An official in power says, you're a criminal, you're a terrorist, you're a problem. And it's so. And they affect your life. And we've got a story coming, I get to it. They kill you first over this error, this crime. A review of the administrative record makes it difficult to conclude anything other than that the defendants use anti-Semitism as a smokescreen for a targeted, ideologically motivated assault on the country's premier universities. Burroughs said Harvard is currently, even if belatedly, taking steps to take to combat anti-Semitism and seems willing to do even more if need be. I found that statement fascinating as well. Isn't that freedom of speech? The term, requires a deep investigation on its use. So I'm surprised she came up with that way. It wouldn't have undermined her decision here. She said it is now the job of the courts to similarly step up to act to safeguard academic freedom and freedom of speech as required by the Constitution, and to ensure that important research is not important properly subjected to arbitrary and procedurally infirm grant terminations, even if doing so risks the wrath of government committed to its agenda, no matter the cost. The ruling reverses a series of funding freezes that later became outright cuts as the Trump administration escalated its fight with the nation's wealthiest universities. If it stands, it promises to revive Harvard's sprawling research operation and hundreds of projects that lost federal money. Harvard's lawsuit accused the Trump administration of waging a retaliation campaign against the university after it rejected a series of demands in an April 11 letter from a federal anti-Semitism task force. Trump officials moved to freeze $2.2 billion Bravo dollars in research grants the same day Harvard rejected the administration's demands. Harvard was the only institution to sue over the administration's cuts to research grants. While the judge's decision may not be the final word, it is an interim rebuff of the Trump administration's campaign to remake elite higher education by force. Right, Lip Bouton? This time he didn't ask for money. You realize this predates the Lip Bouton 10% shakedown. And from AMD, remember. Beyond the courthouse, the Trump administration and Harvard officials have been discussing a potential agreement that would end in investigations and allow the university to regain access to federal funding. President Trump has said he wants Harvard to pay no less than $500 million. Now, how does having a shakedown artist for a president make America great again? If great is what it ever was, I mean beyond the plantation nation, it appears to have been designed to be. Because it's been really great at doing that, especially since 1913. Also Trump, L.A. troop deployment violated federal law, judge says. President Donald Trump violated federal law by deploying National Guard troops and U.S. Marines to carry out a local enforcement in Los Angeles over the summer as protests raged against his immigration crackdown, a judge ruled. The decision Tuesday on in San Francisco blocks the Trump administration from using federal troops for law enforcement activities anywhere in California. The ruling comes as Trump continues to say he will use the military in other major American cities where he claims crime is out of control. Well, the ruling is, again, he claims crime is out of control. Remember, Washington, D.C. rule evidence and statistics showed that it was had been on the downturn for quite a while. And I'm not arguing the rightness or wrongness. I'm saying there's a question that Trump blows right by that would be a legitimate challenge that he doesn't care about, that would negate his ability, his authority. While the ruling is limited to California, it demonstrates how courts may respond if Trump follows through on suggestions that he'll deploy troops in other cities. The president has already activated the National Guard in Washington to crack down on what he called out-of-control crime and has threatened to do the same in Chicago and Baltimore, among other Democrat-led cities. I will solve the crime problem fast, just like I did in D.C., Trump said Tuesday in a post on Truth Central Social. Chicago will be safe again. Tuesday's ruling, which, following a three-day trial last month, rejected Trump's argument that the protests, which were sometimes violent, created an exception to a more than a century-old federal statute called Posse Comitatus, which forbids members of the military from enforcing civilian laws except during limited circumstances such as an insurrection. Quote, there were indeed protests in Los Angeles and some individuals engaged in violence, U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer wrote in the decision. Quote, yet there was no rebellion, nor was civilian law enforcement unable to respond to the protest, enforce the law. So let's look right there real quickly for the police power of the federal government. Has a constraint. It, these two elements needed to be found before that force could be used, that power could be exercised. No different than the communicable disease law required at least five steps to be found before the police power of the state could be wielded against what they called COVID. And had they done that, they wouldn't have been able to find that there was anything to act upon at that point. But moving back to this, here's your police power invocation that Trump was invalid in doing. About 300 federalized troops remain in Los Angeles, according to the ruling. The decision bars the Trump administration from using federal troops for law enforcement activities, including arrests, searches, seizures, traffic control, crowd control. Let me go back to traffic control. Trafficking control, crowd control, interrogation, or acting as informants. The ruling does not prevent the U.S. the use of troops to protect federal property. The judge said he was applying his injunction statewide instead of just in Los Angeles because Trump demonstrated desire to violate the Posse Comitatus Act in other cities, including Oakland and San Francisco. Breyer cited a C-SPAN broadcast of Trump's August 27th cabinet meeting in which he discussed sending the National Guard in Chicago. Quote, I have the right to do anything I want to do, the judge quoted Trump as saying. Quote, I'm the president of the United States. If I think our country is in danger, and if it is in danger in these cities, I can do it. The judge previously ruled that Trump had to return control of the National Guard to state authorities, but that the ruling was put on hold by the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The new ruling applies specifically to Posse Comitatus Act. Breyer rejected the administration's argument that concern about the ability of federal employees to do their jobs without interruption was an exception to the Posse Comitatus Act, saying that such an exception would be limitless in principle. Quote, there is no question the federal personnel should be able to perform their jobs without fearing for their safety, the judge said. But to use this as a hook to send military troops alongside federal agents wherever they go proves too much and would frustrate the very purpose of the Posse Comitatus Act. The judge noted that Trump never invoked the Insurrection Act, which is an exception to the Posse Comitatus Act. The Insurrection Act has several guardrails, such as requiring state and local officials to request federal assistance, the judge said. Now remember, back in the great COVID swindle, I told you that Trump would come out and he would direct order the warp speed, and then the states were going to then request the money. And I said that was exactly the opposite that was supposed to happen, and you're seeing the very same thing and statement stated here. The states are supposed to make the request. They're not to be imposed upon. There is that 10th Amendment apparently still working yet. Quote, if the president wants to avoid the act's restrictions, he must invoke a valid exception. Like the Insurrection Act, along with requisites showing that the state and local law enforcement are unable or willing to act, the judge said. The judge also cited the use of troops for a Department of Homeland Security, quote, show of presence action dubbed Operation Excalibur at the MacArthur Park in Los Angeles, an area popular with immigrants, even though there were no high-value targets or threats to federal property there. Quote, Excalibur is, of course, a reference to the legendary sword of King Arthur, which symbolizes his divine sovereignty as king, the judge wrote in a footnote of the decision. Now, are we hearing the common denominator method of what Trump does? He just goes in, doesn't care, he makes this false excuse, and he's affecting what are supposed to be inviolate rights, rights that he is subject to guarantee, not challenge and go to the courts to challenge. He's supposed to watch out for them and make a wide berth between him and those things. And he doesn't. He comes like a charging bull, runs right over the matador and maims them really bad. And then you, as the maimed matador, get to go up and try to solve the problem with the courts. And we have another evidence of that right here, and this is really troubling to me. As we move this thing through, as I said, he could do most everything he's doing, but he could be the peacemaker, he could be the guy who settles things if he would just follow the law right and not hurt people, but he doesn't care about that. Everything we know about the U.S. strike on an alleged Venezuelan drug boat. All the same elements in this story as well. Is Trump proving he's the most notorious and serial mass murderer of all time, is all I can say about this one. The strike, the first of its kind in the Caribbean, destroyed a suspected drug vessel killing 11, but raised questions on legality and escalation. Understand the problem here. It raises questions on legality after killing 11. So you heard the problem right here. It was a suspected drug vessel. It was also reported to be in international waters, and it couldn't reach American territorial waters. It has been subsequently reported that the boat was actually a fishing boat. From the video, the authenticity of the video being questioned for being potentially AI-generated, doesn't appear that there are any packages aboard. I don't see any weapons. In other words, it didn't appear to be a terrorist assault boat threatening any United States interests directly. But all that doesn't matter, does it? There is no authority to murder 11 people traveling in international water. If there was authority, and it was in U.S. waters, the boat would have been stopped, boarded, searched, the passengers and the crew identified, and if nothing found, it would have been released to live another day. And even if drugs were found, the penalty was not death. Now, if they fought the stop, they would get lit up, just like any traffic stop. Now, I'm hooking it back to the beginning. Remember, I talked about trafficking, traffic stop in your car. Put yourself there. But this was an illegal extrajudicial, no judicial warrant or due process, extraterritorial instant death from above, execution with multiple murders. Well, unless Trump is the drone king and Peace Prize recipient Barack Obama in disguise or by Uniparty. And this all got me to thinking, too, given it's said it was a boat of 11 trade Nicaragua, Venezuela gang members, how did the Navy know they weren't smuggling people and those innocents were murdered too? So I'm not sure whether people see how close to trafficking that you do at home in your cars is to the trafficking the United States just determined it would eliminate without due process. If the president can murder people in a small boat without right, reason, or due process, he can murder any one of us. and whether by deception through CGI, AI creation, a lie by omission here by that working to falsely claim fulfilling some campaign promise in order to impress the pom-pom Iranian faithful, or by the actual extrajudicial destruction from the sky of a boat full of people in violation of law and all things holy, Trump is not honest in these dealings whatsoever. But the problem is, by his past deeds, such as aiding genocide in Palestine or continuing the supply of weapons until the last Ukrainian, it's not unreasonable to observe Trump might be a global serial mass murderer using things like such as drugs and gangs and immigration invasion, or helping his billionaire buddy oil companies in or near Venezuela as excuse to fulfill his bloodlust, advance an unspoken agenda, or both as a distraction. Peacemakers don't need the destructive chaos to bring peace or to work deals with other people to prosper. But peace fakers, on the other hand, among other things, use chaos for self-aggrandizement and promotion to cover for their failings or to advance unspoken deleterious agendas from the cheers to the pom-pomeranians, and in this case, also to the benefit of the next election. You know, thinking about it further, Trump isn't such a wheeler-dealer for Americans if not AI fabricated, and if Trump would have done it by the law, the government could have auctioned that boat to an American who wanted to go fishing or run drugs or guns for the government, fast and furious-like, to keep down the competition. But for now, I think I'm going to take this on Trump's word that he torched a bunch of people from a distance using the military. Now, the administratively defined War Department murdered them without due process, because that's his apparent modus operandi at home against the potentially unilaterally government tyrant declared homegrown and the gravest danger to we the people. In other words, that Trump will violate you or even murder you without due process and with no way to get due process or remedy because you are dead. And the state then takes half of your estate, if not the attorneys muscling in to steal it outright, or for their parasitic cut, those people in that boat never will be able to object that they were innocent, that Trump is wrong, or to what extent. It is nothing an American can be okay with. Additionally, destroying inviolable rights is not playing 6D chess. It's the actions of a rogue thug in a criminal syndicate taking advantage of the license given to them in the reservation, the right to alter or abolish. In particular, where the judicial branch has positioned itself and can no longer timely stand in the gap to protect against such abuse, and as we've seen since Obama and through the PATROT Act and federal compromise legislator complicity beyond the PT, President Trump, the P.T. Barnum promotion, it looks like old tyrant same as the new tyrant. As an aside, mentioning the PATRT Act, which came first, the Muslim threat or the Zionist influence to create a Muslim threat or invasion to cause the people to demand Zionist control from the most effective moral defender of democracy that will commit genocide of the homegrown in response? Knee-jerks. Yeah, think about that. From the Say It Ain't So department, send me an email. Explain how this ain't so. But from the Caribbean to the Panama, for the first time in a record, Panama's ocean fails to flip. Weakened trade winds disrupt vital cold water upwelling in the Gulf of Panama. For the first time in the last 4 decades of record-keeping, the annual upwelling event in the Gulf of Panama on Panama's southern coast was a no-show in 2025. This process, typically driven by the northern trade winds each dry season between December and April, brings a cool, nutrient-rich water from the ocean depths to the surface, supporting robust fisheries and offering a thermal buffer to coral reefs. Locals also count on the upwelling to keep the Pacific beach waters refreshingly cool during the summer months. This year, however, scientists documented an unprecedented absence of upwelling, meaning the unseasonal temperature drops and productivity surges in the region were notably missing, according to new research in the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute. The researchers attribute the event to weakened trade winds and change they link to broader climate disruptions, though they say more work is needed to pinpoint the exact causes and to assess the long-term implications for local fisheries. Is this a climate disruption or just the climate? And that is about as close to hearing the deceptive term climate change as you're going to get for now, with Trump doing what he's doing. How refreshing. As is the acknowledgement that we don't really know anything, in particular the cause, because more work is needed to pinpoint the exact causes. No doubt. The study published Tuesday in PNAS points out that tropical upwelling systems are not only vital for ecosystems and coastal economies, but also under-monitored globally. Think about blindness. The blindness that doesn't see the sun, I suppose. Researchers say that the event highlights the growing vulnerability of essential oceanic systems as climate variabilities intensifies, with the potential consequences for communities dependent on these waters. Is climate variability actually intensifying or just doing its climate thing in its own time? They also emphasize a need for better observation and forecasting tools. Quote, "This is a wake-up call," STRI oceanographer Carlos A. Rodriguez said. A wake-up call, really? How about just another scientific conundrum exposing the ignorance of mankind about the environment he exists in, the observations and tools that are wholly inadequate? Because as a scientist, with all due respect, Mr. Rodriguez, even with the best observation and fundamental tools, what you gonna do about it? Who you gonna call? Greta? Now, don't let my criticism of this soft peddling of the climate agenda in light of Trump's appearance on the scene, this lack of upwelling, really is a serious and potentially detrimental effect on the fishery. It will be interesting to see if they can identify even a rough cause that might indicate when the upwelling will start again. Is this a long cycle? Is it indicative of a less polar ice melt to the overall system to allow upwelling at all? Was it the Earth's magnetic field moving sufficiently away from the poles, as it's moving actually into the center of the oceans? Is the atmosphere becoming less viscous, that it sticks to the surface of the Earth better as it spins? We don't see that wind, that relative motion. Maybe the fact that there is no sun, right, Greta? Hopefully time and better observations and fundamental tools will be able to tell. Very interesting. Again, only within the time of observation, 40 years, is really nothing compared to what we should be looking at this Earth system and the solar system within which it sits to identify what might be going on. But fascinating. First time in four decades. No upwelling. Pretty neat. Pretty interesting. And from another scientific dose of reality exposing how much we just don't know, scientists make a surprise find about giraffes. Giraffes have been grouped as one species for centuries, but new research splits them into four distinct ones. The unusual development is accompanied by a sobering dose of reality. They wrote that, folks, right there. Dose of reality. Three of the four face extinction. The new information comes from the International Union of Conservation of Nature, which cited the genetic and anatomical studies showing significant differences amongst giraffes across Africa. Quote, "A giraffe is not a giraffe, so to speak," Michael Brown, a co-author of a IUCN study, tells the New York Times. If these guys weren't so corrupt, I'd really get into what they're doing here. We don't know what they're doing. Anyway, I'm going to take it on the surface. Very interesting. A giraffe is not a giraffe. Who would have thunk it? Now we have four different species, each with their own narrative. This was some dramatic implications for how we viewed giraffe conservation across Africa. Yeah, it's going to improve their ability to beat down people for the conservation of giraffes, which I have no problem against, but they take it too much. But how cool is that anyway? The life is stranger than Greta believes, or fiction, as it were. So what I want to know is, which one of you stopped holding the intention that this dimension contains a giraffe? This has been BTWRLM 644, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite.
Call behind the woods.